2, Off the Record with Mary Turner, brought to you by Budweiser, the king of beers. For all you do, this Bud's for you. You too, Off the Record.
Bono Hewson, The Edge Evans, Adam Clayton, and Larry Mullen. Four musicians with more than cars, guitars, and girls on their minds. They're singing about pride, passion, peace, and people. They've sparked an unforgettable musical fire. I'm Mary Turner, and for the next hour, I'll be talking with Edge and Adam. You too, Off the Record. U2 are not simply a popular rock and roll band. They're very young, very idealistic, and they're one of the few successful groups to break out of Ireland in the last century. Plus, three-quarters of the band are evangelical Christians, and they write about everything from the violence in Ireland to Martin Luther King, the 4th of July, and Elvis Presley. All of that helps make U2 a very interesting rock and roll band. Fans and critics love to talk about it and listen to the group. After four albums, they're famous. But Adam Clayton says they don't feel famous.
Well, for myself, and I think I speak for the rest of the band, we derive far more pleasure out of doing a job well, out of writing good songs, making good records, playing good concerts, than any of the fame or indeed small amounts of money up to this point. I mean, none of those things affect us because I think it's belief in yourself, I think it's self-respect, it's dignity for what you're doing that's important. Certainly, the fame and the money help in that you can sort of, at the end of the day, sit around and say, well, you know, at least we've been appreciated for what we've done. But I don't think that those things are a major concern for us. It's very much writing good songs. I don't think it'll change because we really do drive ourselves very hard. I mean, we're totally horrible to each other.
Really?
But it's all for the when we're writing or recording, it's sort of, you know. But I think we all know when it's right, and that's the important thing.
Dave Evans is a guitar player from Dublin who started a band back in 1978. Once the group got rolling, Dave picked up a nickname, The Edge.
Well, it's Bono's fault, you know. When we were a lot younger, around the age of 15, 16, he gave me this nickname, and for some reason it's stuck ever since. I think at that stage he was so impressed with the angles of both my appearance and my guitar playing that it seemed right. So when we started deciding on the credits on the album, the first album, Boy, we thought, well, let's put in The Edge. You know, it's what people call me, so why not? It almost breaks down the first barrier between me and the audience because it's like a term of endearment.
In 2 hours, you're going to be on a plane on your way back to Ireland. Are you glad to be getting off the road for a couple of weeks?
Going home is great. Dublin is a very important place for you too. We grew up there and we continue to live there, even though it's in many ways economically it makes no sense to live in Dublin, where none of the business of rock and roll is dealt with. It would make far more sense to live in London or New York or somewhere like that. But for us, it's always been almost a shelter from the storm, somewhere to retreat to, somewhere to draw from. In terms of influences and cultural influences and musical influences. So I'm looking forward to going home. It's going to be a well-earned rest.
U2 is picked to be one of the big bands of 1985. They're already one of the busiest. The day I talked with them, they were doing two interviews for television, getting their pictures taken for the cover of Rolling Stone, and adding a few more concert dates to their spring tour schedule of the United States. Then they were taking a couple of weeks off for their first vacation in 11 months. How did one untrendy, almost old-fashioned guitar-based band end up on the top of the charts? We'll hear from Adam Clayton and The Edge right after this. U2's fourth album, The Unforgettable Fire, is not exactly filled with pop songs. It's not a difficult record to appreciate, but it's more complicated than War. The Edge says you have to take chances or you'll never be satisfied.
We never really can afford to worry too much about what people think. I think when you start catering for others first, you lose a certain I don't know, a certain hook to what you're doing, a certain vision for it, and an understanding for what you're doing. You've got to really work for yourself first, for that vision that you have. And when you're pleased with what you're doing for yourself, I think that's when you really are doing your audience the best service. If you start trying to analyze what they want, start trying to cater for other people, I think you're in a very dangerous area. I know a lot of bands who really do that, and I think it can really backfire.
On this album, there are three songs that deal with very American kind of topics. What makes a band that's born and raised in Ireland write about Independence Day, Elvis Presley, and Martin Luther King?
Well, I've asked myself that question. You know, it's not that we sat down at the outset of work and said, well, let's make this album, you know, contain a few political statements for America. I suppose it's coupled with our love of this country. Having been here now about four or five times, we have, I suppose, got quite an insight into the culture and the way people are. Also, in many ways, America symbolized the promised land in Ireland. You know, there are so many Irish people in this country. In fact, far more people of Irish descent, say, in New York than actually in Ireland, which is kind of strange. So there was that sort of interest. Also, in particular, Martin Luther King, because of what he stood for, because of his non-violent resistance to the injustices of the, you know, the way blacks were treated here. I think if you take that attitude and those ethics to Ireland, you can apply that to the Northern Irish struggle and see that in many ways there's a similarity. So that interested us very much. And Elvis Presley, that's the other person that we comment on. I think that was really something that Bono had been feeling for a while. He'd read the Albert Goldman book, and you know, he felt cheated in a sense out of his feelings for Elvis, because he grew up thinking Elvis was like just great, and he suddenly read this book and his illusions were shattered, and he was saying, well, you know, I refuse in a sense to let this book destroy how I felt about this man, because it was what he did on stage, what he did when he was recording, that was really the measure of the man. And I think everybody has a negative side to their personality, and it just so happens that the most famous book on Elvis really was very, very biased towards that negative side.
Through some bizarre twist of fate, rock and roll is more frequently associated with corrupting people than with uplifting them. Bands are almost expected to be rowdy, loud, and ill-mannered. A Christian lifestyle is definitely not part of the act. So when you have a band that undramatically states that they are predominantly Christians, you make a lot of rock and roll fans suspicious. Adam Clayton, the only member of U2 who is not twice born, says there's nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah, in a way, I don't think Christianity is as threatening as people actually think it is. I think it makes perfect sense. I think the majority of people tend to live their lives very much in that way. The difference it makes to them is they have a very good code, a very good moral code to the way they live. And I think ultimately most people work their way towards living most of that code anyway. I just think they probably have a much stronger grasp on what they want to do and what they don't want to do. Whereas most of us are willing to try it once and see what happens. I may not necessarily be a good influence on them, but they're definitely a good influence on me.
In 1981, when U2's first album was released in the United States, lead singer Bono was quoted as saying, "There's a certain chemistry that was special about the Stones, the Who, and the Beatles. And I think it's also special about U2. I feel that we are meant to be one of the great groups." Adam Clayton says that wasn't the unwarranted boasting of an inexperienced frontman. That's the way a band has to think if they're going to make it in the music business.
From the age of 15 or whatever, when we started the band, we really would not have survived the first week if we didn't wholeheartedly believe that we were the next Beatles. Whether or not it's an illusion is immaterial. But if that's your goal, if your goal is high enough, well, then you'll have the guts to sit it out. Because I think rock and roll is a very strange thing, and it's totally peculiar to unto itself. And that from the ages of sort of 12 or whatever, I don't know whether it's the same for girls, but certainly for boys, there is this fantasy of the electric guitar. And I think every boy wants to play an electric guitar. And nobody knows what to do with it. So because you don't have any technique, because you haven't learnt the chords, you just turn it up and make loud noise, which is, in a way, that's the basis of rock and roll. But once you've got the guitar, you're not going to let anybody know you can't play it. and that's what you just try and do by turning up all the time. You substitute volume for technique, and I think eventually it sort of levels off somewhere where you sort of relax on the volume and start to learn to play it a bit. But it survives on that sort of... it's just bluff, really, isn't it? And I think that does fuel a lot of musicians until they reach a point where they actually are in control of what they're doing.
A U2 song is instantly recognizable for two reasons. One is the voice of Bono, and the other is the sound of Edge's guitar.
Well, I suppose when we were learning to be a group, because that's what we did, we weren't musicians before we were a band. When we started putting together our material and starting to arrange our songs, one of the things that was in the forefront of my mind was that whatever we did, it had to be ours. It couldn't be derivative, a rehash of what other people were up to. And so over the years, I suppose I have really thought that very important, that I am presenting something that is unique, that is individual. And it's developed. It's not something that I sat down and worked out. It's just over the years, I've developed an individual style of playing. I suppose coupled with the fact that we very rarely would learn other people's material. I mean, we learn to play by writing songs and arranging them ourselves. So it's a slightly different way than most people, who tend to work out the parts of their favorite guitar players, and therefore their influences are far more obvious.
Adam has said that he doesn't think U2 albums should be broken down into hit singles. He thinks you should write albums. Do you agree with that?
Well, I see albums and singles as two very separate mediums. I think in the past and to this day, U2 as a band has been far more successful in the album medium rather than singles. And certainly when we come to record for a record, for an album, that's what we're thinking about. We're not thinking about whether this song might do well in the charts. That's the last thing on our minds. So in that respect, Adam is perfectly correct. We really are anxious that the whole piece, the whole collection of songs work as one collection. I think in the future we might well develop some sort of technique for the hit single. I think as a medium it's very challenging and quite exciting, and I know a lot of really, really good musicians have in the past done very well in that area. People that I really respect and like. But up until this time, we haven't really put an awful lot of energy into trying to master that single technique. I think it has kind of a bad reputation. When you think of single bands, you think of bands that produce really throwaway material, stuff that you might like 1 week, and then after you've heard it another 20 times, you're sick of it. And that's a thing that we kind of steered clear of for a while. But I'm interested with the idea of producing something innovative and with longevity that will also have the sort of immediacy to be a hit single.
Charles Schulz once said in his Peanuts comic strip, there's no heavier burden than a great potential. If that's true, then you two are carrying a lot of weight on their shoulders. When we come back, The Edge talks about living up to great expectations. I'm Mary Turner, talking with The Edge, Off the Record. U2 is often called a politically conscious band, a band that can change things. There's a lot of pressure on you to do great things musically and socially. Does all that pressure become kind of oppressive?
It is a pressure, but it's actually something that we've brought upon ourselves. So, you know, we never really complain or worry about it. I think if this band has taken any crusade on, I suppose it is the crusade to fight apathy, to fight selfishness and self-centeredness, which I see as a direct byproduct of economic hardship. When people are forced into a situation where they don't really know whether they can get a job, or they don't know whether the next meal is coming from, obviously they're going to react in a way that basically says, well, look, I don't care about anyone else. I've got enough problems. That seems to be the pervading feeling around at the moment. It's reflected in our art, which the film industry and most of the music industry is all escapist. There's very few films, very few bands that are trying to deal with the reality around them. And we're not necessarily setting ourselves up as the leaders, the vanguard of a movement, or, you know, to tell people how to run their lives. What we're really calling them to do is to be aware and to look around and not just accept what's going on in a government level, because they're too caught up with their own lives to bother thinking about it.
You'll be on a plane headed for Ireland in about an hour. What would you say if the guy sitting next to you asked you what you do for a living?
I'd say I was a musician. I think of myself as a musician first. A musician, for me, is not just somebody who plays an instrument, but it's somebody who can communicate through an instrument a feeling or an emotion. And that's who I relate to musically. I relate to people who can do that. It may not be, you know, the Jeff Becks, although I think Jeff Beck is great. What I'm trying to say is not someone who necessarily has incredible technique on the instrument. It might be someone like Keith Richards, you know, who really just has the right feel. Some of these old blues guitar players. That's really what I think of myself as.
How would you explain you two?
I suppose a band with a difference, a rock and roll band, but with a difference. It's very hard to really create a category for yourself.